Welcome to Finance with Fernando. I am your host, Fernando the Mortgage Maverick. Thank you for joining us today. I have a special guest with me, a friend, someone I grew up with were we in elementary school together?
It was way back.
Yeah. Years ago, like over 30 years ago, Matthew Valvano. He's a real estate agent with Berkshire Hathaway here in New York. I'm having you on because I talk to you a lot, right? And we do a lot of business together. I know you on a personal level. And you're such a great resource for so many people. And that's why when I invited you, it was, number one, I know it's hard to book you, right? Because you're all over the place, right? Nonstop. This guy literally hits the gym at like 4:45 in the morning, has 2 hours in the morning working out, and then works until 8, 9 o'clock at night, even later sometimes. I get emails from him. But you did admit you go to bed at 9. So at least I know not
nine-ish.
To... Okay, 9-ish. It depends. It depends how crazy the day is. But like, so I wanted to have you on, and I don't want to talk about market trends and all that stuff. I figured where we would kind of hit home on is like, number one, what do you see as far as red flags when clients contact you and you're kind of vetting them out, they're vetting you out? What's like an ideal client for you, right? And this is a question that not many people ask, right? Clients come to you and they assume that you're going to take them on as a client, right? But I think the caliber of work that you do and what you bring to the table as a real estate agent is different than other agents, right? And you have to vet them out, and the relationship has to be a two-way street. So what is like, what's a red flag for you, or a few red flags that you see if a client comes to you and is like, hey, I want to see this house at 8:30 at night, no pre-approval, whatever. Like, what kind of things do you usually just have your guard up for?
Totally. So I personally like to have either a Zoom or a phone call with any new clients just to kind of establish some sort of background here.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I have no problem if someone does reach out to me, you know, if anyone does, I'm going to show them the property. Kind of like that one freebie. Let's figure that out.
You mentioned that before. One freebie is what you give them.
But like, we need to know so we're not wasting their time and my time, you know, level of knowledge they're at already, what their timeline's going to be, what goals they're trying to achieve. So just kind of have a kind of like a script of how it should be going.
Yep.
It's always going to change though, because every deal is different, every buyer is different, every seller is different. So kind of just roll with it, but set that base there.
I see.
So
solid foundation for the relationship.
Exactly.
What their needs and wants are.
Exactly. Because there's like two ways to think about it. So many people say, reach out to the numbers guy first.
Yeah.
Know what you can get pre-approved for, then speak to the agent.
Yep. Yep.
I'm on the other side. Well, you should speak to the agent so I can put you in touch with someone knowledgeable, someone that I trust, someone that I work with regularly.
I love that, yeah.
Because having that team, deals are a lot easier when it's all right working with me.
Yeah.
And then with my team of attorneys, mortgage brokers, bankers, everything like that, it just tends to go a little bit more smoothly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
Makes sense.
Establishing all that from the get-go is...
Do you get a lot of, like, pushback when you're trying to create barriers with clients and require that they do certain steps and homework before you, like, bring them out consistently?
Generally, I don't.
Okay.
I am fortunate. You know, a lot of people do reach out to me. They find me online. They find my reviews. We set up that Zoom or call, like I said. So there's already a little bit of a layer of trust. So I don't experience it that much. But every now and then, you know, do have some that are skittish if they want to get pre-approved for whatever reason. I can understand if they're not in a massive rush. But there's certain like goals you should be hitting along the way.
Yeah, it's funny because I talked to a client yesterday that actually was referred to me by a financial advisor. And they're looking to buy a year from now. And they were like, you know, why would I get pre-approved now? And I'm like, do you even know what a budget would look like, you know? And we've had that conversation with some clients too. So it makes sense. I mean, like, I'm calling it red flags, but it's not really red flags. It's basically you're reinstating everything. You're restating everything that I typically say about like the process, like get ahead of it. Know exactly. And you've done that in your own personal finances as well, multiple times, like break everything down as far as the numbers. Is there anything that you really notice as a red flag if someone reaches out to you where you're like, you know what, this is not going to be a good fit? Is it like maybe hours during the day? Is it, I don't know. Is there anything like that that you could just recommend people don't necessarily do to create a relationship at times?
Yeah. Or I find it sometimes when I get an initial request, if it's through text message, and everyone's just being short, like, hi, I'd like to see this property. Like, doesn't even say who they are.
I see.
Are you an agent? Are you a buyer?
Yeah.
And then when it's like pulling teeth, it tends to go the path of they're just looking to get in quickly. So it is what it is. I'm still going to show it to them. Still my job to represent my seller, get people in the door. But that could tip me off sometimes where I know, you know, what's the real story if they're just going from listing agent to listing agent. It is what it is. Some people do that.
We both deal with clients that are like, feel we're disposable, right? Totally. And like, you know, even though there's a lot of contacts, right? And there's a lot of like spider webbing with our network. I think what's important for people watching this to realize is that no matter how much business you do in the industry and how great you are at what you do, there are always going to be people in society that take advantage of that and don't want a relationship per se. They just are like, they want you to be an order taker.
Like,
yeah, they want you to be an order taker, which in certain, you know, capacity, it's okay, but it's also like, we need to kind of know you a little bit before this goes any further. Now, I'm sure technology has changed that as far as like the intake of clients as well, you know, because you started doing this just like me over a decade ago. And like when I first started doing mortgages, they were paper files, right? So I'm like, I got to hole punch everything and print it out and stuff like that. Has technology, especially after COVID, has it caused it to be less relationship or less, less of a warm feeling? Or do you see that technology has kind of helped with getting people to you and then you kind of creating that bond? You know, like, how do you see technology changing the industry as well?
The biggest change, which I've seen throughout, this is my 18th year, yeah, right out of college, so...
That's crazy to me, dude. 18 years. Holy Christ, that's a long time, man, because we're not that old either, so
still
it's...
Still in my 30s, so I'll take it.
That's a long time, wow, God bless.
So the biggest change is just how educated the buyers are.
Okay.
Because there could be numerous agents, brokerages, everyone that could be negative on Zillow. But at the end of the day, they provide a resource to potential buyers.
Yep.
They have a ton of information. Not always accurate, but it makes me be even sharper on my game because the last thing I want is a buyer to walk up to a house like, oh, this looks great. Remember, it sold in 2017. It was priced for $850, went for $860. Interesting. We're several years later, past COVID. All right. So what are we, over $1 million now? And they'll know the trends of that neighborhood. And
yeah,
it's great because one of my biggest functions as a buyer's agent, I feel, is to educate my buyers because I want them from that first day of like, oh, it's a house, it's pretty, to when that right one comes on and be like, all right, I'm ready.
I got to jump on.
Yeah. Like, how do we be as strong as humanly possible? Like, what do we have to do with price? What do we have to do with terms? And they start answering their own questions because they've been educated on the market, understand the inventory, understand how much things are going over, asking about how long they've been on the market, and they know, and it's great to see when buyers I've been working with, if it's 2 months, 2 years, who it just clicks of like, we're going to put a full court effort to make sure this goes through.
They get it. Yeah, so you're educating them and empowering them. Like I always say to people, and you're bringing them to the point to basically, they're like showing themselves per se where they want to be.
Yep.
You know, and you're giving them that assistance. But so you're saying technology is allowing them to do the research, like very different than when we first started. Absolutely. Where we would have to like look through a book and say, look at this listing in the Penny Saver, you know, and then like call the agent, oh, give me more info, blah, blah, blah. So it's actually a good thing, you're saying.
Oh, totally. And I was on that tail end. So when I started in 2006, wild market then.
Yeah. Wild West.
Yeah, but yeah, it was similar to now.
Yeah.
A lot of things going over asking, not that many days on market, but definitely longer. I mean, most agents did not have a smartphone. So, like, you were reachable, but you did have to go back to the office.
You had to go back to the office,
yeah. Retrieve that offer from your email or from a fax. I still faxed in the early days.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Just seems like forever ago. Yeah. But now with the technology, I mean, online presence of its New York Times, Zillow in its early days, you still saw the house and the photos and everything look good. But having that history of what it sold for.
Yeah. Yep.
Flood zones come up a lot. I see that with a
great
lot
point.
Of
yeah.
buyers.
Especially with all the natural disasters, you know, that plague Westchester County and the surrounding
exactly,
areas.
Exactly, where a lot of buyers will go on to Redfin now because they're like, all right, they have a lot of information on floods. It's wrong.
Most of the time, right? FEMA, you could just go on the FEMA.
You could just go on the FEMA website
and, like, website and
this
see.
This is as straightforward as it can be. I check the MLS first and then can cross-reference it on FEMA just in case, because you don't want to slip by on that.
So do you, so do you do something different when you're researching a property for a client? I'm happy you brought up FEMA, because on the side of, like on the lending side, if there is flood insurance needed, number one, you're required to have flood insurance, yes. Right? So if it's in a flood zone, you have to have flood insurance. But it also changes your monthly nut, right? Because flood insurance could be, you could have your homeowner's insurance, which could be, let's say, $2,000 a year, and flood insurance could be $2,000 a year, right?
Correct.
So now you're paying $4,000 a year, and that completely changes your budget, right? And what you could afford. So are you taking those proactive steps when you're researching a property for a client and looking at these little nuances on every deal?
100%, especially...
It's wild. So much
now,
time.
It is, but...
It's good, though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you don't have surprises.
Exactly. Say if I have 50 buyers in the mix right now in all different stages. I just started working with a couple who told me right off the bat on the first Zoom, we're probably not going to be ready until 2026, but their referral from a previous client.
That's far out. Wow.
Yeah.
They're
young in their careers, they're saving up.
But you can mold them. You can actually like educate them enough where...
They're just getting ahead of it, so I applaud them for doing that. So of those 50 in the mix, I know a good chunk are like, don't even entertain anything with a flood zone. Why would I want to live there? Why would I want to pay that insurance? But I do have some that say, like, there's no houses, I'll take it. So that is one thing. That's a huge issue if you don't know about that. And then you get to the contract. Now you just fell in love with the house, did an inspection.
The whole emotional attachment.
And your attorney says, by the way, I got this rider that says you acknowledge it's in a flood zone. Wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Because you can't rely on a listing agent to put that out there that it's in a flood zone. And then that agent may not even know. I always say not all agents are created equal. Just because the sellers aren't paying, they may have bought that house in 1972.
Maybe it'd be grandfathered in,
The house is paid off. You don't need flood insurance if you own it outright. But if you're getting a mortgage, you're right.
I've seen them
as low as $400 or $500 for a tiny little portion in a flood zone. Or I've seen in Rye, direct floodways, $4,500, $5,000 a year.
Yeah.
With knowledge and information being presented to us saying, like, completely flooded in Ida, the basement, 6 feet on the first floor.
That's wild.
Still went into a bidding war.
See, this is what's funny. If you're watching this, listen to what Matt is saying, because the diligence that you do ahead of getting into the transaction, before you fall in love, before you give your deposit on contract, and if you're an agent watching this and you're not doing what he's doing, you're going to get burned. It's going to happen, right? I mean, now, did you learn this because you were burned at some point and you're like...
Thankfully not on a flood zone or anything.
Okay.
Listen, surprises still come up. I do lean on some insurance reps now and again because they can do what it's called
a
clue report.
Yeah.
You know, like anything ever happened, this house gets struck by lightning, that a tractor trailer crash into it at some point.
A lot of
like some of those bigger things that are like, okay, what's the red flag?
Well, the property disclosure I just heard is going away, right? I think that credit for the property disclosure
March 20th.
So that's going away. How does that change things?
That it's more or less the same form.
Okay.
6 pages that everyone always chose to just give $500.
I feel like that property disclosure like burns so many people if the seller just withholds information and gives you $500 and then
completely. It was the biggest loophole in New York. I always said of like, how do you just get off the hook of like a serious material defect? You may know for $500. Like at least make it at least be like, all right, it's $5,000. Then people would be like, oh, that's a lot of money. But now, you know, it's interesting because if you have like those older families that have been there since the 70s. I get it. A lot of people could be like, I don't know. I think I did the roof in the 80s and it's going to say, not sure. I don't know. So you're going to get bits and pieces. And speaking with every attorney I work with and even then some, it's so hard to actually go back to someone. And like, you'd have to find
hold
such
them accountable.
Just like, why'd you call Roto-Rooter 17 times in these like 3 years?
Yeah.
And you had massive suit. Like you'd have to really dig deep. So I think it's going to help for some buyers to have that warm and fuzzy feeling, because I work with a lot of clients that come from all over the country that just laugh the first time. Like, what do you mean there's no disclosures?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Provide them.
We do it different here, and I don't necessarily agree with it, because I think what happens a lot, I notice with clients that buy using you or like specific professionals that educate more, they have less, like they know about stuff, right? So like if there's a leak in the bathroom, they knew that there was something that was going to cause something similar to that, right? And it may not be 100% every time, but there were questions that were asked before they ended up closing. There was like, okay, this is kind of crappy. You may have to redo this at some point. So it's not a surprise, right? Yeah. Because every piece of real estate, you know, because you've owned a bunch of homes, everything needs work to some extent, right?
New construction needs work.
Seriously, right? I mean, I've heard Toll Brothers, which is a huge builder here locally, build crap. Right, like they just have defective, I've seen some of their homes that are beautiful and well done, and I've seen some where they subcontracted it out. The subs weren't great, the materials weren't great, they weren't top notch, things fail, you know, things flood, and it's new construction, right? So I love the diligence. Now, you're a one-man show, right? So you're doing this all yourself, and you're top 10 in the state with Berkshire Hathaway. Top 10 at Berkshire Hathaway. There's a lot of heavy hitters at Berkshire Hathaway. And that's like so admirable, right? Because you're not on a team, right? I've known you for, you know, almost my entire life. You've always done it yourself. You've crushed it, right? For so many years, back to back to back to back, even before the COVID market. How do you do it? What do you do? Like, I know you're against the team mentality.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it just discipline? Is it time blocking? Is it all the above? I mean, what?
It's having a plan each day. Like, if I was to wake up in the morning and be like, let's figure this out. I mean, that's what I do with most of my day.
Yeah.
But there's at least a schedule that says I'm gonna follow along of what I'm doing. And whenever I get a screwball throughout the day, nonstop, it's just like, all right, adjust. But having that plan of where am I going today? Today, it was early workouts. Then it was some showings. A little office work. Here I am, showings again. Put the girls down, and it'll be a couple of like wrap up calls tonight. So like always having that plan, and I'm able to structure my life where I'm not overwhelmed all the time.
It's funny because I have agents. Some of you that are watching have contacted me mentioning your name, and I've said this to you, that are like, "How does he do it? How does he show in Westchester County? Close something in Dutchess? Go over to Putnam County? Fly? You know what I mean? Like, where does he get the time to do this? Like, there has to be someone behind the scenes, and you don't have anyone, right? It's just you have an admin, right,
that does some stuff. You know, she does some stuff, an assistant that's not full-time. Like, it's just, like, the real minutia stuff sometimes, little research, things like that. So you figure it out. I mean, waking up early is, like, you got to make time in the day. There's only 24 hours, and
the schedule is a big deal.
Yeah, like, I need to be wrapped with any kind of workout or whatever in the morning by 8 the absolute latest, because then I have more or less 12, 13 hours to accomplish things throughout the day. And there's tons of time that I'm blocked out. I want to go for a run midday. All right, well, it's
you said that to me the other day, and this is what's funny when I was talking with him, and he's like, I didn't get my workout in the morning, and it was like, what, noon or something, or 1 o'clock, and you were like, I'm going to work out. And I was like, my response was, why the hell am I not doing that? Like, why am I trying to fit it where, like, it used to happen, you know, because I remember years ago, it was like, okay, I would work from 9 to 5, and I had to work out either before 9 or after 5, you know? And now before 9 and after 5, when you have kids, you know, it's like, that's their time. You know, you're helping, you're trying to do the family thing. But I love the fact that you actually built that in midday, and I was like, this guy could crush it and do it, and then all of a sudden it had to be done. I like the way you say that, because you treat your business that way, and it's impressive. Like the fact that you're like, listen, for an hour, I'm working out. I'll get back to you. I'll do what I need to do, because it's like a mental thing, right?
Oh, totally.
Do you attest a lot of that success to like mental well being, physical well being as well?
100%. I spend so much time outside. Sounds so cheesy, but like sunlight and fresh air.
Yeah, man.
Like, it doesn't matter what time of the year it is, but, like, just staying active, it's, like, the best thing.
It's important. It's important. Anything else that you want to mention about yourself, your business, what you're seeing things change, what you're implementing in the new year? I mean, I know we're almost in March, but is there anything that you're, like, really focusing on this year that you think is going to be big for the future buyers, sellers?
Just being well-prepared. I mean, there's so many things that can change in this business all the time, but it still comes down to like that personal touch that I like to put on it, and having clients that trust me and listen to me and know like, all right, we feel confident with this decision, because you have to be so ready to go on a home nowadays. You know, there are, I'm noticing, not as many showings on every listing, not as many offers, depending on the town. maybe it's not a guaranteed $100,000, $200,000 over ask. There's still plenty that are going. It's crazy, but only $20,000, $30,000,
$40,000
over ask. Yeah. So, like, makes my job more difficult of how do I not just suggest a number to clients where we're throwing money away, engaging where I really feel like that should be. At the end of the day, it comes down to what a buyer's willing to pay for.
Yeah, what they want, what they want.
I've told some this house isn't worth over X, and they're like, we totally have to offer over that.
Wow.
That's their choice. You know, like, I get it. I tell everyone the same thing. My new home, I would have paid double.
I mean, I remember when you were buying your house, you were like, I would pay hundreds of thousands of dollars more. I mean, it's a beautiful house, right? And you got a lot with it. You know, and I think it's one of those things when I talk with buyers, what I tell them is real estate can't be replicated per se, right? Because a location is a location. Exactly. And that's what the saying is, location, 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 right? But the thing is, it's also your lot of land, your amenities, your ability to grow your amenities at your property, right? And that's something that you've always looked at, and I see the way you speak with clients, and even on a personal level, like how you've explained that. It's impressive, and I am impressed by you daily whenever I, you know, interact with you and talk to clients. They come prepared. Do you think, this is my last question, do you think we're ever going to go back to the way things were before COVID, where no pre-approval will be needed to go and see a house, because now you need one, right, no matter what? Do you think it's...
still ask for them.
Yeah, you think so, right?
Yeah, because the only... I will say, my only little gripe in the industry is it does drive me nuts when a pre-approval is required for a showing, and then there's an open house on a Saturday, and, like, just let anyone in.
Let anyone
in. You know, like...
Yeah. That's a good point.
I know... Not all agents will do that. Some will say it at the front door, like, no, you need a pre-approval. There is one that hounded, wanted within 2 weeks, everything. And I get that seller's decision. Not saying I just want to do whatever, but I'm like, well, if you're requiring it for a showing and then just letting anyone else in.
Yeah, if I'm going to show on a Thursday and then there's an open house on a Saturday, you shouldn't need a pre-approval. Or the open house should say you need a pre-approval to gain access.
That's, you know, there should be that disclosure, because I'm a big believer in treating everyone fairly in the same way. So hold it consistent across the board for something like that. Going back to the old ways, I am the first to say, and I still do stick by this, like before COVID, I'm like, oh, all right, if someone was reaching out to me in September and October and I knew we weren't looking until maybe November or December, good chunk of my buyers understand their finances and everything like that. So they know whereabouts. So, like, maybe that's a casual time. And I was like, all right, but the start of the new year, like, knowing they have window shopping now, then I was like, get on it. Now I give more of a nudge just because so many do require pre-approval to get in. And you need to be prepared. I have brand new clients I'm showing. Today's Thursday.
Yeah.
Saturday.
Okay.
They are doing everything to be ready. I've never met them. We've only had... some text messages exchanged, then we had a phone call, we had a Zoom set up for that initial intro for next week, but then the perfect house for people I've never met, I know it's perfect for them. I was like, all right, we have to do this. They're already listening. They're already got their pre-approval.
Wow.
We're going to meet before the showing so we can discuss just the process. You know, I didn't get my chance to do that on Zoom.
Yeah.
Even though every deal is different, let's go over the perfect game plan.
Yeah.
And then let's see how many different ways it can go sideways.
Yeah.
Because it
makes sense.
Does.
It makes sense. You taking notes here?
A lot of them.
He's going to be buying, so you better be taking notes, my friend.
So many.
He literally has pages and pages of notes. Dude, it's so awesome to, like, know you and like do business with you. I appreciate you coming on. I think we covered a lot. I didn't want to just talk about, like, what's going on in the market, right? Yeah. Because it changes weekly. You know, what's today's flavor could be something different next week. You want to mention anything else? What about social media? Do you want people to follow you? Do you want to say anything?
Simple, Instagram, Matthew Valvano, or just Google Matthew Valvano.
There you go.
It's hard for me to hide anywhere. There's a couple other ones, realtors though.
Do you, I know you're big into Google. A lot of people find you on Google through...
Yes.
Really?
So a good chunk of my business is people just finding me online.
From reviews.
From those reviews.
That's awesome.
Fairly certain. I think I have the most reviews or one at the top for realtor.com. So people just, if they're searching by that, there I am.
That's amazing. You heard it here first. Matthew Valvano, Berkshire Hathaway, top 10 in New York State. Thanks again for coming, brother.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. I'm not going to keep you. Stay tuned for some other great content. Follow me at Real Mortgage Maverick. We'll catch you on the next one.